Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime.
What's up, SDS Nation, and welcome to another episode of Surviving the Survivor, the podcast that promises to bring you the very best guests in true crime. And if you ever watch Sanford and Son, Lamont was going to have the big one, and it happened just now. Major malfunction on our end. So apologies to everyone for the long delay. Back onto another system, and here we go. The elusive Danilo Cavalcante captured on day 14. How did authorities get him? Did he say anything? And where does he go now? Even though you guys waited 20 minutes for us to get this thing cranking, sincere apologies. We are in motion now. First best guest, you know him well, and so does the nation now, because he was all over CNN all morning long. Agent Scott Duffy, he's the director of Wilmington University's Criminal Justice Institute. He is a retired FBI supervisory special agent of the Wilmington, Delaware office. He worked violent crime matters, gangs, bank robberies, and fugitive task force cases for 20 years before being promoted supervisor of the violent crime task force in Wilmington, Delaware. And for 5.5 years prior to that, he was a police officer in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So he knows a lot of the people, both the feds and state and local authorities that were working on the hunt for Danilo Cavalcante. Then you've got Alfredo Perez, who's been with us before. You see him there. He's actually coming to us from a Marshall conference. Imagine that, as Danilo Cavalcante was captured. I could have used some of those guys. He is a former U.S. Deputy Marshal out of Houston. He's recently retired as of July. You can see the relaxation on that face, but he's still going to conferences. And he's worked in tandem with our very own Detective Phil Waters. And last but not least, the man who, for the very first show, the very first time, he was here for the big one, the big disaster, and he seems to have survived it. Douglas McGregor, he is a forensic behavioral analyst and consultant. This is fascinating to me. We're going to ask Douglas what he does exactly. He specializes in geographic profiling. We always hear about criminal profiling. Doug McGregor is a geographic profiler, as well as linkage analysis for violent crime and missing persons. He has a master's of science from Missouri State University. He resides in the Great White North in Ottawa, Canada, with his wife and two children. So welcome to one and all. Scott Duffy, you were all over the CNN cable news. What an unoriginal name, Cable News Network. Ted Turner couldn't have come up with something better than that. Captured day 14. What a relief it was. People were saying, ask Scott about the goosebumps, because Scott said he had them. How did you feel hearing that he was in custody at last?
That's what I had. It's for anybody that's been in the fugitive game, obviously, Alfredo, wow, it is the thrill of the hunt. And so it's a couple of good ones here, especially in my career. This one I watched virtually. I couldn't be a part of it, but I had a few friends and there was some on the inside of it. And so you're getting just a little bit of inside information. But ultimately, when it came down to it, I did get that text just about, I would say, no more than 30 seconds or a minute before it started hitting the airwaves. And I could tell through that text that that it was a great capture. So, yeah, I'm feeling with the team. I feel like it's all family, and kudos to them. What a multi-joint task force, just a bunch of great people that did this. Mm.
Alfredo, to all the haters out there, there's a lot of people, contrary to what Scott just said, who are like, oh, what took police? What took marshals? What took them 14 days? They should have gotten this guy in a day. Are they watching too many movies? And don't forget to unmute yourself there, Alfredo.
Yeah. Sorry about all the noise in the background. I'm actually at the U.S. Marshals Museum that just opened up. So the guys here are really nice about letting me talk to you guys from the main room here.
Let's plug it. Where's the museum? Let's plug it.
It's in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and it's the only freestanding federal law enforcement museum.
Nice.
I just opened it 2 months ago, and they got a lot of really incredible history, a lot of good music exhibits here. You have a lot of historical sites. It's right here on the bluffs of the Arkansas River. So come out and see some good history here.
That's all. By the way, is there a portrait of Alfredo Perez in that Marshall Museum? Yes or no?
No, but there's video.
Awesome.
There's some video.
That's awesome. By the way, there's a picture. We're looking at escaped killer Danilo Cavalcante, who hopefully will never get that chance again. As you can see, 14 days on the road, on the run, I should say, and he's captured by an intense manhunt for him. He's wearing that Eagles sweatshirt. The governor, Josh Shapiro, today half joked that he was going to get him whoever he stole it from, a brand new Eagles jersey. We know how that football is in Philadelphia. They're savages when it comes to football, Scott Duffy. You know that. Doug McGregor, to you, what do you do? This is fascinating to me. Before we even get into Danilo Cavalcante, what is a geo profiler?
Sure. So I'm a behavioral analyst, but I look at the spatial, the temporal, the environmental, and the geographic elements of human behavior, specifically when it comes to crime, offender behavior, crime scene analysis, and victimology.
And I see, I couldn't find a photo of you anywhere without your dog. You do everything. What is your dog's name? Male or female? How old? What kind of dog? And are you closer with your dog than your wife and two kids? You can tell me.
I actually have three dogs, so I'm not sure which picture you pulled. I have a husky, a pointer, and a Great Pyrenees. But the pointer and the husky, I've actually trained to track as just a hobby on the side. So I have some appreciation for what the people were out there doing with the trackers, with the canines.
So with Danilo Cavalcante, this particular manhunt that just happened, hypothetically, it was still going on, and hypothetically, if they called Doug McGregor, what would you do? How would you start in your pursuit of this guy?
So when I look at fugitives, escapees, fugitives, I look at them as humans with wants, needs, goals, objectives, fears. And I try to perceive them in that way. And I approach them as a missing person, because they are missing. They're missing from a prison. Everybody has their own approach to fugitives, every department, every law enforcement agent or officer. But that's how I approach it. So when I look at a fugitive, for me, there's basically three stages, and it's not linear. It can be cyclical. The first stage for a fugitive is survival. There's no spatial element there necessarily. It's kind of get distance, survive that initial, the initial search, and basically get some space and some time from the people that are looking for you. After that, they enter the resource kind of stage that they, of their escape, where they start to look for resources. They start to look for people that will help them out. And then the final stage is the goal or the objective. What is their objective? Is it just to flee the country? Is it to go live the high life and until they get caught again? Is it revenge? I mean, there could be any number of goals or objectives for the fugitive, depending on the person themselves.
Really fascinating. I'd never heard of geo profiling before. PJ's Heart, we love you, Joel, and your new set, just awesome. Don't have a stroke, too late. We wait all day for you. Followed here by That Was Confusing by Tiff Knox. Welcome to my life. My life is very confusing. Scott Duffy, before we still have to get to all the details, and there are plenty to get to. Michelle Spohr here. Does an escapee go back to Gen Pop with extra security, or will he be put in isolation for how long? As far as I know, he is being processed, or was processed, or is still being processed at Pennsylvania State Police Barracks. And then what, Scott Duffy?
Yeah, so he's already en route. If he's not already in place at his next stop, he was processed. Whatever happened at Avondale, whether they attempted an interview and he consented, I'm not sure. But there was a pretty good motorcade with him in it, heading to a prison. So things will change. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do, but obviously they made a good move not to return him to the county prison. So he went to what I would believe is a maximum security within the state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has several throughout the state, and that's what happened. He was waiting for transport to serve out his life sentence. And he managed to escape because it is a lower security. And so they did not return him there. And all of this is going to play into a new package of whatever is going to happen with him. There are definitely going to be some protocols. And I imagine his file is going to, anybody who's able to view that file with regards to what are his abilities to scope out his new digs, and I'm sure he'll start day one looking for any cracks in security and see if he can take a gander. I don't see this being the last attempt for sure.
Good point. And what's interesting, a criminal will criminalize. And what I've heard is that within all the state penitentiaries, there are areas for guys like Danilo Cavalcante that are much more secure within there. So I don't think he's going to be in Gen Pop, at least not for the foreseeable future. And as you can see from the COE, he is en route to the state prison where he's going to serve out his life sentence. And Pennsylvania State Police today saying that they're going to look into new potential charges against him. I was wearing my headsets till I realized the audio was coming off the computer. So we're doing this all on the fly, and that's good because the headset was killing the top of my head. So there you go. STS Nation from Alabama got Canada in the house here to support Doug McGregor. Sarah, Joel, you got this show together fast, not fast enough, but appreciate that. Another one for the dogs. Alfredo, it's interesting. At the end of the day, and I think we talked about this last time, over 500 police officers, different, 500 members of law enforcement. You had the U.S. Marshals, you had Border Patrol, you had all these other guys there. But at the end of the day, they unleashed a working dog that nabbed this guy, and you saw some blood. Well, that dog latched onto him, and how important are those dogs, Alfredo?
Really important. I mean, they save lives. The last time we talked about Border Patrol, the CBP. Those guys are experts at tracking at night. This is what they do every day. They track people every day in their home districts. So for them to come up and do this in the woods, all they needed was an area, and they got the area once the burglar alarm was tripped off. Once the helicopter said, hey, I got a heat signature here. That's what they do. They work off of that type of information every day back in their districts. And then to top it off, they made a small perimeter, had the dog go do what he does best. And he went and got him. And put yourself in this guy's shoes, this little angry person that's a killer. He's hiding. He's scared. He can hear people walking through the brush. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, because he can't see and he can't hear this dog, this thing just starts putting some pain on him. And he probably starts screaming and yelling. And, of course, that gives up your position to the good guys, and they went in there and safely took them into custody. But it's really important for those dogs to work with other handlers and other teams, because they know what to do and they won't give up until they got their guy in custody. That's, dogs are so important to our military, law enforcement, search and rescue. Even they can even smell a seizure before it happens. So I'm so proud of these dogs.
Yeah, and it was Canine Yoda, apparently, that did what he had to do. So shout out to Yoda. We're a big dog friendly show here. So happy to hear that. Doug, to you, I know you have tracking dogs, but I heard interest, you know, it's interesting the way they train these dogs. And I don't know how much you know, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Apparently they don't, you know, bite and then release and then bite again to minimize damage. But once it was the lieutenant colonel said it was either a German Shepherd or a Belgian Malinois. I'm sure we know by now, but I have not seen what Yoda is. But once they latch down with that jaw, they just don't release. Is that right, Doug? Until they're told to.
Honestly, I'd have to defer to the other guys on this question. So, I mean, my experience just comes from doing it personally and training scent dogs. So,
and scent dogs. Yeah. Okay. Alfredo, to you, what is the training on these dogs? They don't bite and rebite, right? They're just going in there and grabbing the whoever.
They're trained to grab and hold. You have a bark and hold command, and some police agencies use that, you know, because they want the dog to go up there and bark and not bite. But most agencies like the pursue and hold, where the dog will latch on to the leg, to the arm, whatever body part is presented to them, and they will just hold them, because if they let go and then reattach during the training, if the dog lets go, then the decoy will run away and just not give him the reward of biting. So the dog learns. You probably had a pet dog and you're playing fetch with him. He doesn't want to let go of the ball because he knows he's going to lose the ball. So that's how they basically train them. So, and then when they get utilized in a real way, they will bite and they will hold because they don't want to give up that bite. It's a game to them. That's all it is. They're not mean. They're not doing it out of meanness. They're doing it because they like doing it.
Tolly here, and I think we have a photo that I'm going to bring up in a second. Scott, to you, what are your thoughts? We haven't even gotten to the details of the capture yet, but the questions are coming in rapid fire. What are your thoughts on the photo op? I knew this was going to happen. The minute I saw this happening, I said the media is going to jump on it, and there's the shot. And the media at the press conference said, is it inappropriate? Scott Duffy, these are guys that were working around the clock for 14 days. And you can see Danilo Cavalcante in the middle of that with a couple of working dogs. Do you have an issue? Because they asked Lieutenant Colonel Bevins, who said he had absolutely no problem. Do you have an issue with some of your friends who are working this and the rest of these law enforcement officers taking a photo at the end, sort of as a prized possession? Do you have an issue with that, Scott?
I don't have an issue whatsoever. I think this is fantastic. This is something that they're going to be able to have. They're going to be able to pass it down to generations. This is a big capture. This was an international news event, and this is something that I can easily see going into that museum that Alfredo is in. So, you know, we've kind of been taught, at least I've been taught in my academies and different departments, that, hey, you back off social media, you back off the pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And those were the early days. And there's still a lot of good thought to that with regards to evidence and what this commingling of your personal life along with what you capture. But here, especially in this day and age, and especially after long 14 days, each and every one of those great men and women put their lives on the line, especially when you hear that a gun and ammunition is seized and shots were fired from a resident and he still flees into the woods. And nobody's scattering. They're getting tighter. And so for him to be caught, without what could have easily, without that canine, absolutely, it'd be a different story. I don't think he would be posing for a photo. It would be a lot worse, because for all intents and purposes, he was still looking to escape. Even when he knew the end was coming, he did not throw up his hands, throw the weapon away, and make himself prone. He was actively escaping. And so for these officers to be able to take a photo, I say kudos. It's a great thing. I think the community will be in support of them. At the end of the day, it's going to be something that they're going to be able to pass on and say, I was a part of this capture. Oh, this was a tremendous community under siege, different communities within that county. And they're all ecstatic. And for Donnell to remain there, you have other officers that were able to rush and put eyes on him. So this is a way of giving to law enforcement a moment, their moment, to be able to say, thank you for all your hard work, leaving your families day and night. And this is why we do what we do. So it's a good thing.
To you, Doug McGregor, did you expect this? We talked about this the other day. Did you expect this to end the way it did? Most people thought this guy was going down in a hail of bullets. Are you surprised by the outcome?
I thought it could go either way. I mean, there was good points made for both sides. You know, he did steal a firearm, a rifle, which means he's prepared to defend himself. And you know, when you back an animal into a corner, you never know what's going to happen. So it was tough to say. I think that he had an objective. He had a goal here, and it wasn't to die. It was to keep moving forward. But, you know, and that goes into my profile and the activity space I built for him. But law enforcement, all the agents and officers, the men and women, they did such a great job that they prevented him from doing that. And they eventually made it impossible. But you know, he, like I said, he had a goal. He eventually moved north to a place he was familiar with, into the Phoenixville and the East Pikeland area. He tried to, as I mentioned earlier, he tried to get resources and he tried to make contacts. It didn't work out for him. Law enforcement finally, you know, closed in on that area and forced him out. He then traveled west, and he didn't travel west arbitrarily. The vehicle dump site itself was picked beforehand for him. And that goes back to, you know, one of the things when I look at, when I create a profile is, I do a social network analysis. And when you're looking at a criminal, you're looking at who he's been involved with in the past. And obviously two names come up right away, the two that helped him escape after killing his ex-girlfriend. And so those were the two that I primarily looked at. And where he left the vehicle, that property was owned by the father of one of them. So he continued to have this objective, this goal of moving forward, and he may have continued to move west. I say there's a possibility it could have been towards Youngstown, Ohio, where that person all had additional family, additional properties under that name. So I think that eventually law enforcement just cornered him and stopped his progress. I'm not sure if he gave himself up or he just didn't have time to react violently, but it was a good outcome in the end.
To that point, I think that just getting to the details of this real quick about whether he gave up, I think he wanted to, he was actively, as Scott said, escaping when they surrounded him real quickly. The capture happened around 8 a.m. this morning. You can see here he's in some sort of hospital gown. His feet are shackled there. These are some of the latest photos. And you see what a tiny guy he is, but he's nimble because he was able to climb and shimmy up that prison wall to get out. Of course, he was seen wearing that Eagle sweatshirt that we saw a little while ago, and he looked very dirty, tired, hair matted. You can see it there. That's what happens when you don't brush your hair for 14 days and you're living in the dirt. Also, he had a tattoo on his back, and an officer behind him was actually carrying, you can see it right behind him. Officers, there you see the rifle right there with a light on it. It looks like a Coke can, I believe. And that is the light on top of the rifle that they were able to get from him. He was apparently sleeping on top of the rifle, was in some sort of state of rest, Scott Duffy, when they quietly came upon him. They had him circled within this, you know, well within the perimeter that they were working. So they were in the right spot. They circle him, and that's when the dog was released. Tactically, Scott Duffy, are these guys trained? I mean, because any kind of brush against a bush, a long arm from one of the law enforcement officers hitting a tree, that could alert him because they got him while he was kind of quiet. How are people tactically trained as they're about to apprehend a guy like this in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, it unfolds very fast once they have eyes and once they've made a decision. And these are all contingent plans. You have these contingencies. This is what we're going to do if we see this or come across that. So they knew exactly what they were going to do when they came across the information from the skies. And, hey, this is probably our best bet. And once they confirmed on the ground that this is our fugitive, this is not somebody who's laying in wait doing whatever, this is our fugitive. And so there wasn't any time to consider a plan. That plan was already put in place because that's what they do. They train day in, day out. And multiple agencies have these very, very elite units, and they train. So they have every contingency planned for it. They train for it. And it's like just pulling out a 3x5 card, a file out of your head. Everybody's on the same page. And once whatever that command was given, it was a go. So, and with regards to, from what I've gathered from the press and what I've heard, that, you know, he was bitten in the head because he was in a prone position. And as Alfredo said, you know, these dogs are trained to grab a hold of whatever it is that is most likely going to do harm to somebody. So if you have your gun, you're on top of that gun and you're moving with that gun, just imagine if you are this way and you have the gun anywhere like this, that dog is just going to pounce where it can and where it can see it can do the most effective stop. And then of course you have the tremendous amount of that tactical team that did exactly what they did. It was I'm sure it was amazing to have seen unfold very quickly, but they do. They absolutely trained for it. And I imagine it was precision.
Wendy B, those law enforcement officers deserve that photo, op we talked about. I support it. So do I, but no one cares about my opinion. To you, Alfredo, just talking tactically again, as they closed in on him, he did apparently put up a fight. He was on top of that rifle of his. When he saw the Leos, he started to try to make a run for it, according to the lieutenant colonel in charge of the investigation, through some like thick brush. But they were able to get him. And he also resisted the dog. How dare he? But he resisted the dog. How important is the element of surprise, Alfredo? When you guys train, do you try to surprise these people that you're manhunting?
Yeah. The really important thing to do is just, so there's an old saying, speed, surprise, violence of action. Those three things will render any situation safe. You go in there with speed. You go there in surprise, and you go in there very, very violently. If you get all three of those, the person, you catch the bad guy back on his heels, and he may be a killer. He is going to say, I'm going to kill every cop that even tries to come. But if you catch him back on their heels, they are so surprised for at least 1 or 2 seconds before they start thinking, all right, and now I got to kill again. By that time, it's too late. And that's exactly what happened here. He was probably exhausted. He heard the thunder, the lightning. He's like, it's going to rain. Let me get somewhere where there's thick brush so I can get out of the elements, get some shelter in. And, you know, our guys already had the heat signature. They were closing in. Like I said, these Border Patrol guys, they track people. They track every day, and they train for this every day, so they know how to do this. They are the best trackers in the world, all right? So you have these guys, and they're just waiting for the opportunity. Once it clears up, dog's given an alert, dog knows what to do, surprises them, they go in there and they grab him. Of course he's going to fight. He's going to resist in any way. He's probably trying to go for the gun, but these guys are so professional that they know they have everything under control. They have the night vision. They have the equipment. They have the tactics. And this guy is really lucky that he had professionals going after him, because he'd be dead.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe in a different country, not Canada, but a different country, different set of circumstances.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. this guy might have been dead. Iris Hewlett said, and Doug, this is for you. Had the dog not attacked him, in my opinion, he would have fired that stolen rifle. You're a man that profiles and studies behavior. You think he would have? He was starting to get scrappy, according to all reports. He was starting to try to get away. If that dog didn't latch onto him, you think he would have pulled the trigger there?
Yeah, I think his behavior would have changed. His behavior was survival and to get away, you know, and to not get caught. That was his goal. But, you know, he had the rifle for, I mean, he probably had the rifle initially in order to, you know, keep moving forward with his objective. It might have been to steal a car, to steal from a house, to protect himself. He probably didn't. The initial idea of having the rifle probably wasn't to do a last stand. I mean, it could have been. But in my opinion, it probably wasn't. It was probably to, you know, keep moving forward with what he wanted to do. But yeah, once the dog, you know, got onto him, he knows that the officers, the agents are two steps behind. So at that point, that behavior can quickly change, and then he can just go into, you know, fight mode, survival mode, and it can all go downhill from there.
And Doug, follow-up question, I asked this the other night, I'm curious about this. A guy like him on the run for 14 days, do you think he devised a strategy along the way? Do you think he had something? Obviously law enforcement had a strategy, you know, squeezing the perimeter, but in his mind, is he sophisticated enough, this 34-year-old fugitive, that he was actually planning stuff in his head? Because you mentioned something about Ohio. Did he have a bigger game plan in mind, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his plan, his strategy was there before he left the prison. You know, to think on the run under that much stress is very difficult. And the number of fugitives that are caught in the first hours or days and they just haven't done anything many of them fall to that fate. So he had a plan, and you know, his plan was to go back to fugitives. Like I said, a lot of them have different goals and objectives, but a lot of them have, in the end, they go home. And home, I use in quotations, I use loosely, and home is different for everybody. Home could be an area, an environment. For him, he went back to the Phoenixville area. That was home. That's where he was familiar. We all want to go where we're familiar, right? The area we know. We know where we go, and we go where we know. For some fugitives, home is, you know, their criminal organization, their gang members. It could be family. It could, like I said, it could just be a place. You know, that's where it's hard to survive and to last if you don't know your surroundings and you don't know where to find resources, shelter, transportation, food, for survival. You know, that's, you know, we all know that. So he had the plan to go there first, do what he could do. From there, you know, he traveled, and I don't know where he was going from there. And like I said, he had two former accomplices there, you know, Francisco Wima and Michael Scahill. And they were both given immunity when they testified against him after helping him escape after he killed his ex-girlfriend. And so they didn't go to prison. So they were out. They were available to assist. But after that, after he went to that Phoenixville East Pikeland area, he had to eventually he had to leave that area. And because law enforcement knew he was from there, they knew he was going there. So where is he going to go? Well, after he killed his ex-girlfriend, he went to Virginia. Francisco's brother lives in Virginia. Maybe he was going there. You know, it's probably lucky for him that he never arrived and got caught before that. And then Michael Scahill, he's from Youngstown, Ohio, and he's got family and property there. And, you know, he already used one of his properties, his dad's property. His dad is also named Michael Scahill, to get rid of the van. And so there's a possibility he's already traveling west. He could be going west again. And I'm not trying to implicate Michael Scahill. He may have had no idea or no contact with the fugitive at all. He knew that location and he was familiar with it. So maybe he had stayed at that place. He had visited that house before. But he was comfortable traveling that direction. So yes, I think that he did have this plan, and it may have had a lot of holes in it, but I think he had a plan set out before he left. Mm.
Scott Tuffy, a question I've been waiting to ask all day long of you, and I'm going to ask it right now. Why, before putting him in the SWAT vehicle, once they apprehended him, did they cut with scissors his shirt off before putting him in there? Was that to check tattoos and stuff? He has a big tattoo on his back, make sure he's properly identified, or did they just want to ruin his shirt that was underneath that Eagle sweatshirt?
Yeah, it's probably a Dallas fan. That's what I'm thinking. It's so I think three reasons. First and foremost, that they know who this guy is. I didn't see if anything was brought, but we have these devices, and I imagine all the federal agents have the where you can quickly do a fingerprint, right? Portable, right on your phone. That's it. It's pretty quick to come back and say this is your guy. But with regards to cutting off, first of all, they got to cut it off because they're not gonna take the handcuffs off to get his clothes off and so forth. That because now they're just putting themselves in a more vulnerable position. Cut it off first and foremost. Check that he has no more weapons. Make sure he is going to be searched as anybody can be searched then and there. So you're going to do, you're going to cut the clothing off, ensure that there's no weapons hidden anywhere on, around, in his body. They're also making sure that there's no additional visible wounds, whether it be from his 14 days on the lam or perhaps by the canine that the EMTs, EMS paramedics need to address rather quickly. And then ultimately, because, you know, we did see that tattoo, they knew there were identifying tattoos. Why not go ahead and ensure that they have all the above checked out? So that's why they're cutting that clothing off and before he gets put in to a secure location. Mm.
To you, Alfredo, about the thermal image here, and then we can remove the comment here. So just before we get to the thermal image, the head of the PA State Police running this investigation said that Cavalcante did not have time to fire the weapon. They're working, obviously, in this northern part of Chester County, the northern point of Pennsylvania there. And he said events started unfold after midnight. People have been scanner hounds during this whole thing. A burglar alarm went off, and they went to that home, sent resources there because obviously there were plenty. And there's the new mugshot right now, Danilo Cavalcante's new mugshot. You can see he's cleaned up a bit, and his hair is braided. We're going to ask about that, too. He's going to be in that prison for the rest of his life. And we have sound from the state police, which will take in a minute. I just want to run through this. So the burglar alarm went off, and they sent resources into that area. And then they put up a fixed wing aircraft, not a helicopter, but an actual fixed wing aircraft using FLIR. So, Alfredo, what is that? For those who don't know what FLIR is, it's thermal imaging. And why hadn't they used it prior? I know the weather was kind of bad, but what's your take?
So the FLIR stands for forward-looking infrared radar, infrared. So there's different FLIRs. You have handheld FLIRs that can kind of see through light brush or into an open field. Then you have a little bit, there's different depths of sophistication with these FLIRs. If you have one that's mounted on a helicopter, it's not, it's still a $1 million camera, but it's not going to penetrate a double canopy or even a single canopy of trees. The fixed wing airplanes probably have a little bit higher quality of a FLIR, maybe, you know, where they, you can see through double, triple canopy. And that's probably what they used. Obviously, a fixed wing can't stay up in the, or a rotary wing can't stay up in the air as long as a fixed wing. But the fixed wing can't land anywhere, so it has to find somewhere to land and then come back. So there's trade-offs on what type of aircraft you should use. But in this case, they had an area that they knew where he was going to be in, and put the aircraft in the air with a little bit stronger FLIR, got the heat signature, set up a good perimeter, and, you know, who's your daddy now?
There you go. The COE, if we have the sound from Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens, let's roll it. Let me try that again. You have that there, COE? Let me see if it's in here. Let me see.
Utilizing FLIR technology and close to 1 a.m. picked up a heat signal that they began to track. It was west of PA 100 and north of Prizer Road. And shortly after 8 a.m., tactical teams converged on the area where the heat source was. They were able to move in very quietly. They had the element of surprise. Cavalcante did not realize he was surrounded until that had occurred. That did not stop him from trying to escape. He began to crawl through thick underbrush, taking his rifle with him as he went. Customs and Border Control teams, BORTAC, had a dog with them. They released the dog. Some of our PSP CERT members were also there, had him surrounded. The dog subdued him, and team members from both of those teams immediately moved in. He continued to resist, but was forcibly taken into custody. No one was injured as a result of that. Excuse me. He did sustain a minor bite wound. Cavalcante was, as I said, taken into custody. He was transported to our Avondale station for further processing and interview, and he will ultimately be transferred to a state correctional institute where he will be housed and begin to serve his life sentence.
Doug McGregor, to you on that one, what stood out to you about what Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens just said there?
He's using the environment he has. You know, he's hiding, he's trying to outlast. He was probably just trying to hide it out and wait. When I find that when a fugitive is in a perimeter like that, and the perimeter, the perimeter moved several times during the last 13-14 days. And if a fugitive stays long enough in a perimeter without being caught, it can eventually start to cast doubt on whether he's still in that perimeter, right? And so eventually there's some pressure that gets put on law enforcement to, you know, make that assessment. And do we have to move? Do we have to change things? So, you know, I've never been in a situation with law enforcement where I've been involved in a perimeter like that, but you know, outlasting and hiding is, from an offender's standpoint, is obviously one option if you don't have any path to take, any route out.
Elv, who is a friend of the show here with a super sticker, thank you. Scott Duffy, this is your jurisdiction, I believe. Will the person that had this sawed-off rifle, this is an old man, that the perpetrator stole, be charged because it is an illegal weapon in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Probably bigger fish to fry. Will he be reprimanded or just ignored for that and given his rifle back?
Yeah, I'm not sure what type of rifle that was, Alfredo. If you know, I just couldn't see it enough to see if it was a sawed-off or anything. It looked like it was just a well-equipped rifle. So, aside from I guess the comment is, will the individual be charged? Not Dinesh,
correct, but
the
correct. I think it was an 80-year-old man. Yeah.
No. I absolutely not.
Not going to happen. Gigi here. We are a dog friendly show. The dog is the real hero, of course. So just some more details to hash out, and I'm putting some questions in a queue that are good. Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens once again said that he was all proned out laying on the ground. That's when this DA fixed, it was from the DEA, this fixed wing aircraft with the FLIR caught him. Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens also said, I was confident all along he'd be captured. It's never easy to find someone who doesn't want to be found in a very large area. And speaking of large, there was a comment here that I just lost, Alfredo. And I've seen it more than once, people saying, I can't believe a guy that's this little could cause that much trouble. I'm sure you've seen that before. So size doesn't matter when it comes to creating headaches for law enforcement, does it?
Nope. We had another little 5-foot guy, Elber Vasquez. He evaded us for 3 years, finally found him in Mexico, arrested probably 50 people looking for him. And he was just a little killer. You know, he was a coyote and he would just kill innocent, people that he would bring across. So, size doesn't matter at all. You could be 6'4", 250 pounds, or 5', 120 pounds. You're still a killer.
I love it. I love Alfredo's take on all this. Sandro Oliveira says, this is Brazil's fault. I'm Brazilian, and our country is corrupt and a place with no law. Max sentence there is 30 years. And if they had arrested him for his first murder, this wouldn't have happened. He did escape, in fairness to Brazil. From what I understand, he escaped as a fugitive. But there's definitely some issues going on here that I'm sure are going to be looked at. Scott Duffy, back to you on this. This warmed my heart. Again, Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens said in this press conference that yesterday, to show the support for law enforcement, a bunch of third graders, I don't think they showed up because school was closed, but they had their teacher or someone drop off letters to the command center encouraging law enforcement. This is a very minor part of the story, but let's say you're working a case for 2 weeks straight as an FBI agent, and you get unsolicited mail from a bunch of third graders. What does that do to your heart and your motivation?
It just confirms everything, Joel. I mean, the community wants you. The community wants you there. They love it that you are absolutely doing everything in your power to put this person back where they belong and get them out of their community. Cause they're all on edge. I mean, just think of day and night. Think of the residents in perimeters not sleeping well because they're not sure this guy's going to break into their home. So to have, you know, and there was a lot of extensions like that of cards and people coming out, providing water, food, whatever they could do to help the men and women in uniform. Just, you know, that, just think about it. You're on a perimeter. You're on surveillance, whatever your shift is, 8, 10, 12 plus hours. And, you don't have the luxury of taking a bathroom break, a water break, a food break. Yes, you figure that out, but you have to supplement with somebody else coming in. So that's a high alert, and that causes a lot of stress and anxiety. And so when you see something, especially from a third grader, and I would imagine most of them are parents, that a third grader saying, hey, we're looking out for you and we're praying for you and doing whatever, that just absolutely reinvigorates you, gives you that extra shot in the arm, especially if you're, you know, starting to wear thin on patience and whatever. But that definitely just reinvigorates you. So
Scott Duffy, as a reporter in New York City, third graders would tell me to F off. That's all I got. Literally, you know, I get the expletives, but that's New York City. So, and I loved it. That motivated me. Ashley, first ever, look at this, a super sticker for Scott Duffy's soul patch. It's incredible. Scott, I'm going to put 10 bucks in the mail. I'm going to send it to you. That's yours. That's 10 bucks. Kay the Geeky Angel says, I worked at the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. You must know Phil Ramos, who's a best guest. Guy was a detective for over 30 years, a homicide detective, crazy stories. And Kay the Geeky Angel says, went to the canine trial competitions every year in Las Vegas. These dogs are phenomenally well-trained to catch the bad guy. I would love to go to that. Kay the Geeky Angel, email me, survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. I'm going to bring Scott Duffy. I want to see these dogs in action. I think I said it on the last show when I was a cub reporter in Tucson, Arizona. The U.S. Air Force dressed me up in one of those big Gumby-like outfits and threw me in the middle of a field. And those dogs got me, and it was scary. It hurt, and they thought it'd be funny if they moved the bite around to my groin area. And they did that. And that was it was very scary. It was not a pleasant feeling at all. Doug, to you, back to this Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens, by the way, shout out to him. Always drives me. This is a personal pet peeve, but the governor, of course, is the face of the press conference when he was sitting in his office and flew out there by helicopter. When the Scott Duffys and the Alfredo Lopez's of the world are the ones putting their life on the line. But that's America. The governor shows up. No, I'll stop right there. I was going to say something else. That'll get me in trouble. To you, Doug, Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens was saying that the normal pattern was to travel late in the evening and lay low during the day. This goes back to what I was kind of asking you about earlier. Strategy-wise, I mean, he was kind of smart, right? Like during the day, he was, laying extremely low. What do you think he was doing? What do you think he was doing for food and water? They're going to try to talk to him through a Portuguese translator. But, you know, what was the method behind all this madness?
Yeah, it's just during the day, there's just more human surveillance, natural surveillance, and technical surveillance. You know, CCTV, a lot of it just works better during the day. You know, and during the day, it's easier to search. He spent a lot of the time in the deep woods, marshy areas, wooded areas. And that is very hard to traverse at night for anybody. You're just stumbling over everything, running into twigs, you know, tripping on roots. Which is why it's not surprising that he was picked up on some trail cams. I mean, even animals know this. Animals, there's a reason there's trail cams, because animals use trails. Animals don't like you to walk the deep woods either. During the day, he's obviously at risk of being seen from a greater distance. Visibility, you can see a lot further. So, you know, his option is to move at night. And especially if you're trying to break a perimeter, you know, perimeters can be, I mean, this one, the last one they had set up there, it seemed to be fantastic from everything I saw that I was following online. But, you know, any perimeter can be broken. You know, it just takes looking the wrong direction at the wrong time. You know, so his best chance of getting out of those perimeters, of moving without being seen, it is obviously at night, where he's just cloaked by the darkness. So that's probably what he was thinking. And like you said, laying low during the day, resting during the day, in terms of food and water, probably just taking what he can get. I heard he stole some fruits or vegetables from the one guy's house, until he can get some space and some time, where he can search those things without being stressed.
Iris Hewlett, John Muffler, who's a best guest, who's actually going to come on today, but he's traveling. He's a former U.S. Marshal. Alfredo, do you know John Muffler? It's a small world.
It is a small world. I don't think I recognize the name, but then again, I'm not, you know, all over the place either. But I'm gonna have to get going. So if there's something I can answer real quick, they're closing up the museum right now, and I'm right in front of the Hall of Honor. You know,
I love it. I love it. Shout out to you. Shout out to the U.S. Marshall Museum. Where is it once again?
It's in Fort Smith, Arkansas. It's on the bluffs of the banks of the Fort Arkansas River. So they have a lot of. If you're a history buff, this is a great area to come. They have many small museums, and this is the home of the Hanging Judge Isaac Parker. If you've seen the True Grit movies, that's kind of it's based on a true deputy marshal and a true judge, and that was here in Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Well, Alfredo, you, my friend, are an American hero. You served the nation in the military as a marshal. How are you feeling on a day that your brotherhood, your brothers and sisters in the marshal service, helped nab this guy?
I'm proud of everybody that worked on this case. And law enforcement has come so far from 20 years ago when you'd have individual agencies. They want to go get the guy. They want to go get this guy, and they want to take credit for it. Nowadays, everybody works together. Nobody cares who grabs them. They just want to grab them safely and have everybody takes credit for it. So kudos to everybody, especially the dog, Yoda.
Love it. Alfredo, hopefully you're going to come back real soon. I appreciate it. Travel safely.
You got it. Thanks a lot. Bye, guys.
Down to three of us. Scott Duffy, to you. I heard you bright and early on the CNN today. What a terrible name, the Cable News Network. Imagine you're starting a TV. This is a problem with traditional media. You're starting a TV network, and you're having a meeting, like a branding and marketing meeting, and some guy raises his hand and he goes, Mr. Turner, I think a good name for this whole network, this global brand, would be the Cable News. I've never thought about it till right now. The Cable News Network. That's like if I called my studio the studio. Scott Duffy, it's insane that happened. But I was listening to you on CNN today, and you were asked, what question would you ask of law enforcement right now? And your answer was, what did he say when he was captured? Why are you so intrigued by that?
I don't know why I'd be intrigued. I just want to know, like, what his words were, like, you got me or something, because it's just going to be a spontaneous utterance. And those spontaneous utterances are so important. They're just, you know, just as law enforcement had 14 days of trying to find this guy had 14 days of trying to stay out. So he's got a lot of pent up whatever. And he survived. He should be thankful he survived. And I'm sure something came out in whatever language. I would imagine something came out, and that would have been my question, because I think it would have been interesting at the very least.
Look at this. The fan base is growing. Janine K loves Scott, followed by Scott Looks Extra Great Scott tonight. For those who don't know, Friday's show is called Great Scott. It's your true crime Phil. I just hope the wife isn't watching. Doug McGregor, you're going to come back on this show and you're going to get a lot of heart emojis. But what do you think is going on? You're the profiler. You're the behavioral guy. What do you think is going on in Danilo Cavalcante's mind right now as he sits his ass back in a maximum security state prison?
I think he's probably relieved in a sense. You know, he's probably he'll second guess, or he's upset that he got caught. And, you know, he obviously didn't want to go back to prison. He doesn't want to serve a life sentence. But I mean, being out there for, what day are we on? 14 days, you know, in the wilderness, getting no sleep. And that's one thing that law enforcement in these situations try to do, is they just try to stress you out. You know, they search day and night. I mean, one goal of that is to just stress you out, so you can't sleep. So you're sleep deprived. So you're making bad decisions. And, you know, and I think now he's going to have a good night's sleep. He's going to have food. He's going to be warm and dry. And, you know, in a sense, there's probably some level of relief there.
Interesting. And I've heard that before. And that makes sense to some extent. In a couple of days when he's well rested and his headache goes away, he's probably going to hate it again because he's going to be stuck in there like the fugitive that he is now cornered. Pam Hart Young, I'm late again. Don't worry, we were late today, Pam Hart, by a bunch of minutes. So don't worry about that. I've missed so many lives. Best guest across the board in true crime. It is not a tagline. You're not going to get three better guys than we just had on. Alfredo Perez had to take off, but I came here basically because my daughter lives in Moscow, Idaho. I stay here because it's the best channel for true crime. Shout out to your daughter in Moscow, Idaho, now the infamous home of the quadruple murders there. Great question here from Tennis Girl 101, a friend of the show. Scott Duffy, does Phil know that you are here? Were you able to get a permission? Oh, we can't say anything. No permission slip. Let us not forget that for the last 2 weeks, there was terror being wreaked in this corner of Pennsylvania. And a farmer was interviewed by the media today named Charles Lyman. He says that he believes that Danilo Cavalcante was on his farm twice during this escape. The farmer, Mr. Lyman, was checking regularly. He said he had a gun strapped to him, a firearm, the entire time. And that his 83-year-old mother was there living with him, and she was worried to death, and she is now relieved. At one point, he found a treehouse door open, and he locked that treehouse door, so he thought that maybe Cavalcante was staying in there. What's interesting about this, Doug, back to you for a second, he said he had granola bars in the barn for his horses, and some of those granola bars were missing. I got to say, that's pretty resourceful. A kid from New Jersey, I would not have thought to eat horse granola bars, but he did. It probably helped him, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sustenance, right? Like my parents, they own a horse ranch. And yeah, if he knows anything about horse barns, or I'm sure other, you know, goats or cows or whatever, but if he knows anything about those kind of stables, he knows that there's going to be grain in there, carrots, whatever. So it's a source of food.
Glad to help out Ski Hat Sarah. Glad you were late, Joel. I was late too. Always happy to help. Interesting question here, Scott Duffy. Very interesting question because I hadn't heard this either. Why was the public not made aware of his tattoos? We saw a big tattoo on his back when he had his shirt off.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't hear anything about tattoos. So there were a couple instances where he had shed his clothing. So probably would have been helpful to have put everything they knew of this guy. Hey, there's a big whatever that tattoo was down, in the upper portion of his back. So that's a good question. I think with regards to the last 14 days of everything that the PSP and the Marshal Service was putting out, it was basically stay indoors, lock your doors, keep your keys out of your cars. I think ultimately it was if he got further out of both perimeters and kind of assimilated back into society where he might have been getting into convenience stores or whatever markets, that they would have been a little bit more detailed with regards to tattoos that would have helped identify him. But my guess is that it was just something that was missed because, hey, he's out there, he's in the woods, and if you see somebody in the woods doesn't belong, more than likely that's the guy. That's the only thing I could think of why that didn't get made public.
Doug, to you, and then I've got some bunch of questions. If you guys can lend me another like 15 minutes. I just want to go through some rapid fire questions, if that's cool. But here from Patty Martin, curious of your take on this, Doug. She says he's going to be a celebrity in prison for escaping and eluding capture and giving law enforcement a hard time for so long. Do you agree with that assessment? By the way, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to have a couple of former prisoners, inmates, who are going to come on and talk about this, and Danny Masterson and Charlie Adelson, and what it's going to be like for him to do life, especially this guy, Danilo Cavalcante. But what do you think?
I think he'll have his 5 minutes of fame again in prison, and then the inmates are going to quickly remember that he brutally murdered a woman in front of two small children. And that's not going to go well for him.
There you go. Well said. No one hates people that hurt children more than prisoners, arguably. And they're not going to like that side of it. But maybe in the near term, who knows? From Elf, Joel, are you auctioning off the cardboard cutout of Carm? Sadly, I am not, because as you can see here, disaster can strike at any moment. So I'm keeping the other studio for when the Category 5, God forbid, hurricane hits or something else. And that is where Cutout Carm. Doug, if you don't know, that is my mother, the namesake of the show. She is a Holocaust survivor. And the other set has a cardboard cutout of my beautiful mother, but it is going to stay where it is. However, if you're coming to Crime Con, we had little miniature cardboard cutouts of Carm, and those we can give away. Once we are done, we can have some sort of STS raffle once Crime Con is over, and we will do that. Let me get into some of my starred comments here. We went over some of these. This is interesting. Back to you, Doug, on this from Heather N. Everyone was talking about this at the beginning of the chat. If those were rubber bands holding his braids together, his sister braided his hair. There's no way he also stole rubber bands in somebody's house. That's not necessarily true, but it does look like his hair was braided. Maybe he had a lot of time in between on his hands, and so he decided to braid his hair. Did you make anything of that one way or the other?
No, I didn't really make anything of that. I mean, I think I was like most people at one point with the, you know, the CCTV or the doorbell cam, whatever it was, of him wearing a hood, that he had shaved his head at one point. No, I didn't pick up on the fact that he had rubber bands in his hair.
AJIG, Joel, question for the guys, and this is to you, Doug. How why did the scent dogs not find him sooner if he was leaving behind his clothes with scent? I know there was rain in the area, but how far can these dogs, you know, talk a little bit about the tracking process.
For these dogs, I mean, there's so many factors that go into scent tracking, and the number one factor right in this search was probably just contamination. You know, you're trying to get a dog to, so when I train my dogs to track, and they got pretty good at it, you're giving them a scent, right? So it could be an article of clothing. So I would give my dogs, let them smell a shirt, and then they'd go track, you know, mile, 2, maybe 3 miles at most. But there's so many factors that can come into play there. So the movement of the offender can throw them off, right? So if it's erratic movement, where in a case of a fugitive, it's going to be erratic because he's going to try and go this way, and then he's going to get blocked, and he's going to go that way, and then back that way, and then he's going to go all over the place. He's going to try and evade them by going in water, and then you have all the contamination. So this dog isn't just in a forest with one scent of one human being, right? There's so many smells coming in from so many different people at this time. So these and you know, weather can play a role in scent. You know, light and dark, whether it's light or dark, depends on whether the scents go up or down hills, for example. You know, you search uphill during light and downhill during dark. So there's just, these dogs are very good at what they do, but you know, the environment and the circumstances play a big role as well.
Scott Duffy, the tough questions for you. Did he have a cavity search? Is that something that is SOP after you bring back a fugitive?
I would say a fugitive of this type. Absolutely, there's a cavity search. At what point that was conducted, I know they were pretty meticulous with cutting the clothing off, and then not sure if the additional search would have taken place inside that the Bearcat or later at the department. So it's it would have called for it. You know, there are circumstances where you can't. But I would imagine in this, absolutely. So all everything was done in order to ensure there's nothing that can hurt law enforcement. So cavity search for sure.
Hope ate fear. Scott, you're such a humble soul. Thank you for being level-headed with a soul patch, ironically. But there you go. And then a broad question here from H.K. Schubert, also a friend of the show. Question for Scott. What was the FBI's role? What was the FBI doing during all of these 14 days here? Do they have tactical teams, but what do you know about what they were doing?
Yeah, I can tell you what I know, but also I think what they lend to many of these type of searches. So they would first and foremost lend support. So we need more bodies. The Pennsylvania State Police says, hey, we've run out of our people and so forth. So the FBI is absolutely supplementing boots on the ground. They're great in their technical searches. So if there was anything to be tracked, for example, if a relative, if they got information that a relative gave him something, you know, that they're going to provide assistance in that. They're providing surveillances of different associates, relatives, friends. I mean, you're doing a whole analytical package of the suspect, of this fugitive. And so thereby you want to know exactly everything and going, I would imagine, utilizing the resources of Doug and the like, who are creating packages of the possibility of which direction he's going and who would he be trying to visit. So that's what they're supporting and whatever else Pennsylvania State Police asks. So if, here the Border Patrol tactical team was utilized, then FBI tactical teams are going to stand down. So it's whatever's there is going to be offered by the office and whatever PSP needed, they used.
Jersey Devil, sounding like a South Jersey person here. I grew up right smack in the middle, central New Jersey. Everyone to the north of me, Giants, Yankees, Mets fans. I was Giants and Yankees, for those asking. And everyone to the south, Eagles, the Eagles, the Sixers, et cetera, et cetera. This person, Jersey Devil's got a cute dog, by the way, got to live south of where I was. The Eagles hoodie pissed me off. How dare he wear an Eagles sweatshirt? I was so happy when they cut it off. Scott, was that an affront to you that he was wearing a dirtied up Eagles jersey?
Yeah, and I it was. And so I imagine also when the governors put it out there that, hey, whoever is missing this jersey will be more than happy to find one for you. I'm guessing that governor and his office is going to get more than just one phone call. You may have a lot of new requests for jersey. So, yeah, of all the things he could take, right?
I bet you at the next home Eagles game, there's going to be someone holding a cardboard cutout, not of Carmella, but of Danilo Cavalcante wearing a Eagles jersey. I guarantee it. I called it first. Francis Rose Carmel, Doug, I don't know if you'd know the answer to this, but does Yoda the dog and his handler get a medal, an acknowledgement? I certainly hope so. And hopefully all those who work to catch him do. Do we know if the dog will be rewarded? Oh, by the way, and then ketchup. This is interesting because that was just accolades, but there's also a $25,000 reward. Ketchup, friend of the show, asking who gets the reward, Yoda or the woman who reported saw him crouching in the woods. But do you think he's going to get some sort of accolades? What does he get, Doug? Does he get a special kind of treat, a bone? What does he want?
whatever his thing is, you know, whether it's a tennis ball or whatever. But I'm sure there's, you know, I've seen lots of cases where, you know, the dog finds somebody and they give the dog a lot of publicity. I'm sure there's instances out there they've given them, you know, they've given them medals of what or some kind of commendation as a, you know, as a publicity thing.
Mm. Kay the Geeky Angel became a YouTube member. Shout out to that person. What township in New Jersey, Joel? I'm from Colts Neck in Monmouth County. That is a Bruce Springsteen land. That's a nice part of the state. Let me give my best friend in the world a free shout out. Gary Michaels Fine Jewelers in Manalapan, New Jersey. Not very far at all from Danielle O'Malley. I am from Middlesex County, as is the great Michael Littman, one of my best friends. Are you going to auction Scott off for a dinner date? 100%. But first, I need a written permission slip from his wife. Doug, what do you do every day? I'm fascinated by these types of jobs. You seem like a very low-key guy, but potentially intense, as I am a son of a psychiatrist and social worker. I study human behavior. You seem very meticulous, but what is a typical day like for you in terms of the geo profiling that you do?
You know, most of my day is in front of a computer. So I'm working right now. I have a heavy caseload, quite a few cases for law enforcement, a couple documentaries, some missing persons cases for some nonprofits. I have an intern that works with me. I have a partnership with Chatham University in Pennsylvania. And so I have a great intern that's working with me right now. But I, you know, I spend most of my day in front of my computer. And, you know, although I'm a geographic profiler, I have a, I'm very well averse in OSINT and GEOINT. So OSINT is open source intelligence and GEOINT is geospatial intelligence. Obviously, they complement one another. I do a lot of OSINT and GEOINT projects as well. I'm kind of, I don't advertise those services, but I'm kind of a name that gets passed around if you need to find somebody to big media and to authors, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, most of my day is in front of a computer, either doing OSINT side of it, doing the research, or, you know, doing the mapping side of it and the behavioral analysis.
No bigger media than STS as we go on 20-something minutes late for the show. I hope that you will come back. I'm going to wrap this in just a second. Seamus Cascella says, go Birds. Next game is tomorrow night. Copper Horse here. This is a shout-out to my children who say that if you hit the like button, it gets the algorithm chugging. Used to say turn the open, but please do. It does help. And it's so easy. All you have to do is hit the like button. It's not like I'm asking you to go on a dinner date with Scott Duffy where he could be high maintenance and give you a hard time. Scott Duffy, my final question before we get final thoughts, are you stunned in a way that no one really got hurt in this entire 14-day manhunt? No one shot, no one killed, no one run over by a fast-moving law enforcement vehicle, just a bite to Danilo Cavalcante. Are you a little surprised by that?
Yeah, I am a little surprised and extremely happy. And I know there was a lot of this, a lot of praying, especially from all the officials and the higher ups. You know, there's nothing worse than of all this happening that a member of the community get hurt, right? And law enforcement puts their lives on the line. And just working feverishly. So I was happily but surprised that there wasn't a mishap somewhere. You know, when you have a sighting, you have sirens and police cars rushing from all different angles. And it's one thing when you have your sirens and your lights and you're coming into an intersection and you're looking both ways and everybody else is stopping. But when everybody is in that intersection, have lights and sirens, who's stopping first? It's there could be a lot of chaos going on. So, yeah, I am happily surprised, thankful, very much so. But it's there could have been some injuries of things outside of from a lot of things that take place with this.
What a beautiful dog. There's a shot. By the way, someone said that Doug is chill. I would have to agree with that human behavior assessment. Can you tell from this photo, Doug, if Yoda is a Belgian Malinois or a German Shepherd? Looks like a Shepherd to me, but what do I know?
I have no idea. Yeah, I mean, if I would say a Shepherd if I saw him, but
yeah. All right, we're in the same boat there. Love that. Huge shout out to Alfredo Perez coming to us from the new U.S. Marshal Museum in Arkansas. Everyone better go take a road trip down there. He is a former U.S. Deputy Marshal out of Houston, recently retired. That's why he looks so relaxed. And he works, most importantly, with our good friend Phil Waters, who's coming on an hour early this Friday to do Great Scott at your True Crime Phil with the great Scott Duffy. Doug McGregor, he is a forensic behavioral analyst and consultant specializing in geographic profiling and linkage analysis for violent crime and missing persons. He has a master's of science from Missouri State University and resides in Ottawa, Canada. You can hear that funny Canadian accent a little bit. He lives there with his wife, two children, three dogs. And as you can tell, he is a chill individual. Anything we can plug for you today, Doug, and your final thoughts on this great day where they captured Danilo?
No, I appreciate the intro and the closing. And, you know, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, like they can find me on, I guess it's called X now, at the Geo Profiler. And if there's any cases that you want me to look into, you know, I do a lot of all my work for families is pro bono. I do a lot of cases for families for missing persons and to, you know, finding missing persons presumed deceased. So you can reach out to me. And my email is also on my X profile.
There you go. X profile. It's the Geo Profiler. Is that right on X?
Correct. Yeah.
And X would be Twitter. Elon Musk trolling us all with a different name every week. But I kind of like X. It's grown on us. It's kind of like a new set, a new software, minus the software because it's still a disaster. But shocking at first, and then it grows on you. Scott Duffy, what can I say about him? He is the director of Wilmington University's Criminal Justice Institute. He is a retired FBI supervisory special agent. He did it all. Bank robberies, fugitive task force, which came in handy the last few days. You name it. He's done it. He was also a police officer in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania for 5.5 years. The guy's got experience. Scott Duffy, your final thoughts on this monumental day where this manhunt came to an end?
Can't say it enough. The men and women and the many four-legged, badged, beautiful creatures out there doing the job. Fantastic. Kudos. Hats off to them. I felt the chills, the goosebumps, everything once I heard. And it just takes you back to every other successful conclusion of these very harrowing experiences. So kudos to the Pennsylvania State Police. Kudos to everybody that helped them, supported them. And may the residents and everybody else get some sleep.
By the way, that man wearing the Giants sweatshirt, which I love, although they are terrible this year and looked horrendous, that is the Shaming of Jay. And I'm going to be on his podcast in an hour and 15 minutes or so, he thinks. I'll probably be 30 minutes late, but I'm going to stick with the old-fashioned. You know what's funny? You know what's funny, Scott Duffy and Doug McGregor? My mother has been screaming. My 84-year-old mother has been screaming, don't change the software. Keep it simple. Change the software issues. She's going to rub it in tonight. Going to yell at me some more. Got to deal with it, though. Got to put on a brave face. Very important story tomorrow night for everyone who is still remaining here. Ellen Greenberg, we've been doing her story out of Philadelphia, 27-year-old teacher. She was stabbed 20 times. 10 of them were to the back of her neck and head. 2 of them were post-mortem, meaning she was already dead. It was ruled a suicide. Well, this happened in 2011. All these years later, her parents, Josh and Sandy Greenberg, had been fighting to get the ruling changed to homicide. And guess what? They were just denied by a judge that ruling. So there is no end in sight for them. It is a horrific end. We'll talk about a good ending here. Horrible ending for the Greenbergs. We really need SDS Nation support tomorrow night. Please come on. Josh and Sandy, the parents of Ellen Greenberg, will be on, along with Guy D'Andrea, who was a homicide prosecutor in the DA's office, and Gavin Fish, who's an investigative reporter that's been all over this. Very important story. They should not be getting away with this. This is awful. There's a killer out there, in my belief, and that killer needs to be brought to justice. Please support us tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And as you always do, support us an hour earlier, 4 p.m. Eastern time, for Great Scott, your true crime Phil, this Friday. Until then, love you, America. Sorry about the late tardiness issue. Love you, Canada, Ottawa, Delaware, Philadelphia, the Republic of Ireland, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and I'm sure I'm missing a few countries. Till next time.